Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique, studio plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your studio plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
Hello and welcome to SciGuys, the show where we talk about the crazy, weird, and wonderful stories from the science world. I'm Corey, and as always, I'm joined by my co-host, the languishing Luke Cutfer.
Indeed I am.
This week we're talking about sad stuff and bummed brains, but first we have a wee YouTube comment.
Bummed brains?
No, not like British bummed, like surfer dude bummed.
Oh, okay, like real bummed out. Yeah. Okay, great. What's the comment?
It says, I was highly gifted as a kid. I don't know what I am as an adult, but it doesn't matter because I'm exhausted. And I feel that.
That's the comment.
That's the comment.
Wow, that's bleak.
Yeah. So a question, perhaps?
Yeah, go on.
So, Luke, as you know, and as all of our lovely viewers and listeners know, if you're watching on YouTube, you can get down to the comments and answer this question. If you're on Spotify, you can go to where Spotify keep their little comments and answer there. But if you're anywhere else, Luke, if you're listening on any other audio platform, here is what you do. Go to the doctor and just tell them you're feeling sad. And then they'll probably do nothing for a bit. And in that intervening time, just find a way to answer the question. It'll keep you occupied. The question, Luke, is, are you depressed?
Not anymore.
It's probably the second best answer to give to that question. No, not anymore. Yes.
Okay.
That's in order of best to worst.
So I'm bang average. Great.
I'd say you're an average bang, but let's move on to the actual episode, Luke. Shall we start off with what depression is? So I'm going to ask you a question. Can you guess what it is?
Is it what is depression?
Yes, it is what is depression. So Luke, what is depression?
I'm going to make a guess. Something like depression is a clinical condition characterized by low mood, slow movement, weirdly, always on the questionnaires, and apathy. And sort of a feeling that things are not going to be good in the future.
You're thinking of snails again.
What?
Snails. They're slow moving. They're rather apathetic. Have you ever seen a snail smile? I think not. Things are going to be worse in the future. Of course, you're a snail. Things are going to be bad. And whatever the other thing you said was.
Sure.
If you have these symptoms and more, you may want to speak to your doctor about being a snail. No, but you're on the right track, man. Yeah, that's not what I've got in front of me. But you did say a lot of the correct words in the right order. So well done to you.
The bar is low.
And so is my mood. It's not actually, but that's one of the things you should keep an ear out for if you want to find people who are depressed. You could also just go to Tumblr. Anyways, it's a common mood disorder. It's very serious, of course. It being common doesn't mean that it's not serious. It can be severe or the opposite of that. It's wide-ranging, is my point, Luke. And it can affect you in so many ways. It's more than just feeling a bit sad. Because we all feel a bit sad sometimes, right? You know, like when the Chiefs lose the ball.
Right? Yes, football.
And
man.
When the tennis rackets hit the ball.
The floor.
Wrong. Ball bounced 2-3 time. I'm not sure how any of these sports work, but I do know that playing sports makes you sad. That's the exact opposite. No, but it can affect everything, like daily activities, eating, working, school, if you go to that, other such things. Like, what do you do on a day-to-day basis, Luke?
Work.
Mm-hmm.
I spend time with my wife.
Low depression would ruin both of those things in lots of different ways.
Cook food.
No, none of that.
Spend time with you.
Well, no, that's probably the cause of
I think we found it. Symptoms of depression.
No, so yeah. Do you know any other names for depression? Because depression is also just, you know, kind of, it's like a feeling, like, oh, I'm feeling depressed, you know. So do you know any other names that depression, the disorder, might go under?
Oh, generalized depression and anxiety disorder? Cyclothymia?
So that's interesting. No.
Yeah, I was going
to
say.
To both of those. a partial no.
Yeah.
Yes, so generalized anxiety and depression is depression. But it's also anxiety.
Yeah.
Yeah. And cyclothymia, that is BPD. No, not BPD.
No.
Bipolar disorder.
It's like bipolar light.
We did a whole episode on it. So if you want to know whether Luke is telling you the truth or not, or being offensive or not, go and watch our bipolar episode.
Am I being offensive?
Episode. I don't know.
Well, I was diagnosed with cyclothymia.
Oh, so you can say it.
And
I
wasn't
see.
Diagnosed with bipolar.
Oh,
so.
Yeah, you just didn't go hard enough. That's it. Yeah, right?
Sure. I didn't commit to the bit, is what you're saying.
You're not wrong. Cyclothymia is a type of bipolar disorder. It is characterized by sort of less extremes, if that makes sense.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, you're right, I guess, but it's also fun to wind you up and maybe think you said something horrible. And maybe the comments will do the same. Who knows? The only time may tell. But no, other names for depression would be major depression, major depressive disorder. Major depressive disorder.
Stop. For the listeners, Corey is saluting every time as if he's saluting a major.
Major. And clinical depression. I don't have any of my doctor stuff here, or I would be putting that. Listeners, I have my doctor stuff and I'm wearing doctor's things. Viewers, don't you tell them nothing. Clinical depression, major depression, and major depressive disorder. All names that depression gets called, which probably makes it quite sad. It can affect anyone, anywhere, at any time.
Mm-hmm.
Wherever you are, depression, it can get you. Even if you're the richest man in the world, Elon Musk. Yeah. It can get you too.
I think it has got him.
Yeah.
I think there was rumors that he was taking weirdly ketamine nasal spray for depression.
Oh, spoilers.
Oh, sorry.
No, don't. I'm surprised you knew about that. I found out about ketamine nasal spray and I was like, man, that sounds like a fun time.
Yeah, I think it's a big thing in America. I don't know if that is true about Elon Musk. That is just a rumor. But
okay.
I think the idea that he has sort of bouts of depression is, like, I think probable.
Makes sense.
Yeah.
You know, smart people are often the saddest.
Yeah.
As Lisa Simpson has told us. So Elon Musk is an anomaly. Anyway, the World Health Organization has a whole program to help with depression and also self-harm and other such things that I can't really say at the start of a YouTube video or we'll get demonetized.
Mm-hmm.
Sorry, use your imagination. So basically it's one of their top priorities, apparently. There's the Mental Health Gap Action Program, wherein they want to help a bunch of countries increase mental health services for people. Mm-hmm. Because depression is a big problem, Luke.
Yes, but I imagine it's definitely sort of underfunded worldwide and maybe underdiagnosed as well. And we definitely have a different attitude to it than we do to sort of physical health. So go the thing that you just mentioned that's funding things.
Yeah,
that.
Well, the idea behind this, I'll just read this verbatim from the World Health Organization website for you, Luke.
Thank you.
You're welcome. The program aims to help countries increase services for people with mental, neurological, and substance use disorders through care provided by health workers who are not specialists in mental health. Which sounds, now that I think about it, you know what? Let's just trust that they know what they're doing. Let's just trust them right now, and we can come back to that at some point in the future.
Yeah, that sounds weird.
Yeah. No, I mean, I guess it makes sense, though. Do you know what I mean? Like, not someone who is, I'm a psychologist who studies depression. Just someone who's, I'm a health worker.
Oh.
Do I do social care?
Like, you know what I mean? The doctors do, where you go, I'm sad, and they go, here's antidepressants, go away.
Yes and no. I don't actually know the ins and outs of the World Health Organization's plans. Maybe their plan is just to kick everyone with depression into a big pit.
But what I mean
and
is
have
that,
them fight it out.
What I mean is that...
Give them purpose.
Hang on. What I mean is in the UK, like, the main person you'll see if you have sort of depression that doesn't require, like, a follow-up treatment is not a mental health professional.
No, it's Dan Howell, because just... you're a Dan Howell fan. That's not an insult to Dan Howell. I'm just saying, like, you know, fans. Is that not a... Are they going to come for us?
No, they're not going to come for us.
No, no. Fans are notoriously a very kind...
A peace-loving species.
And non-retaliatory.
Not all Dan Howell fans are depressed. But all Dan Howell fans who are depressed go to Dan Howell for their mental health advice. I think that's what you're saying.
So, look, I do have another question for you. What percentage of adults worldwide do you think are depressed?
30%.
No.
Okay, 10.
Closer.
5.
Very good. 5% of adults suffer from depression worldwide. That's an estimated 3.8% of the total global population. Why might that be?
Oh, because children.
Yeah.
It's not possible for them to be depressed. They're children. They're always happy, no?
Oh, boy. No, I'm joking.
The depression rates are lower in children, presumably.
That is true. They are slightly lower, bringing that average down just a tad. And so approximately 218 million people in the world have depression, which isn't that many. You know what I mean?
It's still quite a lot.
No, it's a lot. It's too many.
Too many.
I just thought there would be more of us them.
Is that like diagnosed? Because I feel like there's a lot of people who are a little bit depressed and they just sort of get on with it.
It just says have, and it's from the World Health Organization. So could go either way.
Yeah.
Yeah. But it is, I imagine it is rather underdiagnosed. I mean, it's not treated seriously enough. Also, I think we're getting to a point sort of societally where it's difficult to draw the line between.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean?
Yeah. I was watching The Sopranos last night. I don't even know.
That's so strange. What a wild thing to do. Have you guys heard this? Luke was watching a television show. That's a strange, weird thing to do.
Stop bullying me. Anyway, I was watching The Sopranos, which is an old TV show about like a mafia boss who goes to get therapy, recommended by Kieran O'Brien. the cinematographer. Anyway, and in this, it was I was talking to someone about how, like, do you think that, like, in this, basically, he's sad on the inside but has to put out a happy front on the outside.
The mob boss just needs to be a big, cheery...
Yeah. And, like, I was like, that's really sad. I definitely remember when I used to do that, whereas now I think if I'm sad, I just sort of show that I'm sad. Mm. And if I'm not sad, I'm not sad. So why would I pretend to be sad? And I was talking to somebody about how, like, do you think a lot of people are doing that? Do you think a lot of people are, like, sad on the inside and putting on, a brave character, like, playing a brave character face on the outside? And they were like, yeah, I think that's an awful lot of people. That's why I said 30%, which is maybe indicative of the social circles I am in and also my view on the world. I definitely think it's way higher than, like, 5%.
Oh, yeah, no. So, Luke, I have a question for you based on what you were just saying there. You know, you're asking sort of, do you think a lot of people are putting on a brave face to hide their inner feelings?
Mm.
That was your question, yeah?
Mm.
So I would answer your question with another question. Have you met men?
Yes, well, exactly.
Just men. Yeah. That's you're describing men.
Yeah.
Not all men.
But then also...
Oh, no, I don't want to say that. Wait. Oh.
You can just... But then also women are also doing that.
Mm-hmm.
Because they're getting on with things. Things mm-hmm. are hard. And they're putting on a brave, happy face.
Yeah, that's so true.
So, like, that's just people.
It's not just people, Luke. It's men and women. The jury is out on non-binary people.
Okay.
Maybe they wear their hearts on their sleeve. I don't know.
I would imagine they do more than the average person. Just a guess.
Maybe they do. Maybe. Anyway, 5.7% of adults older than 60 years old have depression. That's a little bit higher than the average there. And out of men and women, who do you think on the whole are more depressed?
Well, based on what you just said, then men.
No.
Women?
Incorrect. Yeah, no, women women are diagnosed with depression more often than men.
Now, diagnosed.
Yes, there you go.
Men don't go to the doctor.
But that's absolutely not true, and we'll pick up on that later on. I do love the wording of this. I can't remember where I got it from. All the links are below, right? But it says, women are diagnosed with depression more often than men, but men can also be depressed. Oh, wow. Really? I thought it was just them ladies.
The rumors to bed. Men are capable of depression.
Wow. I didn't know we had it in us. So it's 4% of men are diagnosed with depression and 6% of women, which then clarifies that, yes, that 5% is... it's diagnosed. And I imagine 5% of the world population is about 280 million. Could have done all this math beforehand, Luke, but why do that? Where's the fun in that? I want to be spontaneous. Anyway, 4% of men, 6% of women are depressed. So women are about 50% more likely.
Men, go and speak to your doctor.
Don't look at me. Look at them.
Men, go and speak to your doctor. It's okay.
Yeah, no, it is okay to speak to a doctor. That's what they're there for, generally.
Can we normalize speaking to your doctor, please? It's so unnormalized.
Not everything needs to be normalized, Luke. We can just do things. You could be weird. You could be a little freak who goes and talks to your GP if you want. So 4% of men are depressed and 6% of women, which means that women are 50% more likely to be diagnosed with depression, and 10%, or more than 10% of pregnant women and women who have just given birth experience depression as well, which is insane. Probably got something to do with those diagnosis levels being higher in women. Not the only thing, but a contributing factor at the very least. What do you think? What do you think the reason is that men are less likely to be diagnosed? Is it just that men are happier because we've won?
They're just big, strong men.
Yeah,
that's all. They're just big, strong men. They don't let those feelings, those little weak feelings, get over them.
A true alpha would not let feelings get in the way of feeling good. You know?
Yeah. I mean, well, firstly, I think it's just that they're not admitting it to themselves. Like, I think it would be a really weird thing if, like, on some actual biological level, men were just less depressed.
There are people that believe that.
Yeah, believe is not the same as true. So yeah, I think a decent chunk of that would be because they're not actually seeking diagnosis. They are pushing their feelings down. They're just getting on with it, being big, strong men. And then, I don't know, are there other reasons in your list?
Less likely to recognize and talk about and, like, you know, try and find help for those feelings. Yeah. Yeah. I don't want to mention this now because it's an interesting thing and we've kind of touched on it. I'll bring it up more later. But apparently men are more likely to go to the doctor for physical symptoms that turn out to be because of depression.
Stress rather than and things like that.
Well, yeah. So, you know, if you could say weight gain or, all the sort of effects, we'll get onto the effects that depression can have on one's body. But going to the doctor about the physical health impacts without even recognizing, like, oh, why have I stopped being able to eat? And why are things the way that they are? You know, my hair is falling out or whatever, you know, I've got heart problems, this and that. And you go to the doctor. It's like, have you been feeling sad recently? Yeah, I suppose I have been feeling horribly depressed for the past 10 years, but what has that got to do with anything?
You're literally describing the first episode of The Sopranos, by the way. He literally goes to the psychiatrist because he keeps collapsing. And then the psychiatrist is like, you're depressed. And he's like, no, no, don't be silly.
I'm mob boss. I'm happy. That's the one thing you know about mob bosses. They're always happy. I've actually not seen The Sopranos. I've only seen the prequel film, The Many Saints of Newark.
Ah, it's actually an interesting thing historically because it's around the time, I think, vibes-wise, when they were like just releasing Prozac, and Prozac was a big thing that was being like promoted. I'm not saying that The Sopranos was like a spawn for Prozac, but like they talk about it as in like a brand name. They're like, oh, you want Prozac? As it, because in a way that we wouldn't necessarily do now. We would just say you want antidepressants.
Luke,
but because it's America,
like that genuinely makes me feel like it was product placement.
Is it a spawn? I don't think so. It's not wholly positive about Prozac.
I mean, maybe they're just using it as the name.
That
but
would
like,
be absolutely
be
insane.
Really funny.
One of the most iconic TV shows of all time was just a big old spawn for Prozac.
I don't know if you're allowed to do product placement with medicines. I feel like even America would hopefully draw that line. Like it's somewhere before reaching that, but then.
Imagine we find out, like, 50 years from now that Breaking Bad was a big spawn for meth.
Big meth. Just the kids just aren't into meth anymore. We need to make meth cool. Get the dad from Malcolm in the Middle. Just a bunch of dudes in a boardroom on meth coming up with this idea.
My jaw is sore.
That'll be the meth. Anyway, back to the actual thing that we're talking about. You know, obviously, as I've said, women are more likely to sort of be diagnosed with depression than men. Men are more likely to go underdiagnosed or untreated. And also, the LGBTQI plus community, you know that one?
I imagine they're quite depressed.
Well, look, there is data to show that, that lot are at increased risk of depression. Wonder why.
And I wonder if people misuse those statistics.
No. Why would anyone misuse statistics for LGBT people? That would be weird, I think. That'd be a strange and silly thing to do.
Yeah, dishonest.
Dishonest is one word.
Phobic almost.
Yes, but phobic means scared, Luke. People can't be scared of LGBTQIA plus people, surely.
I mean, they can be.
Scared? Terrified? Like having an arachnophobia? I don't know.
There's one in the room.
And as you well know, Luke, there's no other definition for the suffix phobia. And so it would be hilariously silly to call anyone trans or gay phobic. Anyway, let's carry on. Get away from this silliness that we first into. I really hope people understand. Like, this is beyond sarcasm at this point. But yeah, no, LGBTQ plus people more likely to experience depression. I would hazard a guess that it's because people aren't very nice when you're gay.
Yeah.
Just in general.
That'll do it.
Yeah, and fucking better hope you're not trans, because people will not be kind. Anyway, types of depression? Do you know any types of depression?
Major depression? No, I don't know any types of depression. I don't even know what you mean.
You know, different ways that depression presents, you know. Sometimes it's more femme, sometimes it's more androgynous. And sometimes it could be major depression.
Yeah, major depression.
That's the big one. That's the one you're probably thinking of when you think of depression. So that is symptoms most of the time for at least 2 weeks. And pretty intense symptoms. And it can really get in the way with your ability to do all the things you need to do as a human being. Particularly a human being in a capitalist system. Capitalism doesn't like depression, Luke. Why is that?
It's not very good for you going out and doing jobs.
It makes you unproductive. There's another kind of depression. Persistent depressive disorder, which is also dysthymia. Dysthymia. I'll call it dysthymia, I think.
If you want.
Okay. That's like major depressive disorder.
Major depressive disorder.
It lasts longer, like for 2 years is the usual sort of thing, but the symptoms themselves are less severe. You know what I mean? So it's kind of like, oh, we've got an amount of depression. Let's spread it out over a longer period of time, and it's spread a bit thinner. Or you could kind of, you know, just shotgun your depression.
When you say it lasts about 2 years, do you mean like that's the diagnostic criteria for it? Or do you mean like it will clear up on its own if you just leave it for 2 years?
So I guess the way to think about this is that depression can potentially sometimes just go away
like
on its own. Yeah. I mean, I don't know if that's the best way to put it, right?
Sure.
You don't necessarily need medical intervention to get over depression. You should seek medical help, by the way. Just because you can potentially do it without medical help doesn't mean that you should do that. That's not the best idea. But also, you got to think about this coming in sort of waves and sort of, you know, sort of depressive episodes as well, right? So an episode could last longer. With sort of milder symptoms. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Is that making sense to you?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Don't think of it as, oh, you're just depressed for 2 years and then you're fine. It could be that. It literally could be that. But depression is messy and weird, and it's difficult to be very specific about. So some more forms of depression, Luke. We've got perinatal depression. Do you know what that might be?
Is that after you've given birth?
Around the time of giving birth. So peri meaning around, and natal meaning
baby.
Birth. Yeah, sure. Yeah, that works too, I guess. I don't know. But yeah, so that would be, you know, sort of postpartum depression or other ones.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. We could do an entire episode on that because I don't want to dig into that specifically right now.
Mm-hmm.
Much like the rest of these. Seasonal affective disorder, we've done an episode on that itself.
Oh, yes.
Yeah, right? You remember?
I remember.
Did I tell you?
That's just really interesting. Yeah, that wasn't in the category of types of depression, but of course it is. In my head, I mean. But yes, of course it is.
Yeah, that is odd that it's not. Where what box did you have it in?
Just sad. Like, I just had it in the sad box.
You mean sad as in the acronym?
Sad, but yeah. I had it in a type of like melancholy woe as opposed to like a medical depression. But I suppose, yeah, it's just a medical.
It's more whimsical, isn't it? Seasonal affective disorder. Yeah. It's got a name as well that's more a little, it's got seasonal in it, which makes it feel inherently a little bit more poetic. You know?
Yeah.
Like, I'm struck with.
Yeah, exactly.
I simply cannot, my love, you know, like writing poetry, whereas like clinical depression is.
Yeah.
That's not. That doesn't sound fun.
Yeah.
I mean, neither of them are fun. But anyway, there's also depression with symptoms of psychosis. Can you guess what that might be?
Schizophrenia?
No, it's depression with symptoms of psychosis.
Can I guess what it might be?
Yeah.
Is it depression with symptoms of psychosis?
Yeah, yeah, that's it.
What?
It's not a difficult question. There's no trick.
If I held out a block of cheese and I said, this is a block of cheese, what do you think it is? And you said a block of cheese and I went, yes.
Yeah.
I think that was a trick question. It's like a double trick question.
No.
The trick was that it wasn't a question.
It was a question.
No.
You just had the answer already.
Oh.
I'm asking you to use your deductive capabilities.
If I did a maths exam and it went A plus B equals what? And I wrote A plus B equals A plus B.
You wouldn't be wrong.
Okay. Go tell that to the exam board.
Well, if the question is simply A plus B equals, you know, question mark, then all you can say is A. But if that's the only information you're given. You know what, Luke? I tried to make this just a little bit fun, and you sucked it all out like a chupacabra for fun. Oh, God, man, I don't know. Anyway, depression with symptoms of psychosis. It's depression, and then you experience psychosis.
Mm.
very straightforward. which, yeah, you psychosis, that be delusions, hallucinations, all those sorts of things. Mm. Do you know what might go along with depression? If you were having like a lovely meal of depression, what side dish would you put with it? Well, what comorbidity?
Yeah, the main one is anxiety.
Yeah.
Yeah. Generalized depression and anxiety disorder is like this.
Generalized
anxiety. I can't even get it out. That's like the standard diagnosis I think you're given by your GP is like, you just have this.
You come just, in being like, I feel sad. Okay, you're depression, anxious, go away.
You've got anxious as well. You didn't say it, but yeah, you're probably that too.
Probably are. Fucking freak coming in here, talking to me. Little freak, that's not what I'm here for. No one knows. GPs aren't meant to be spoken to. They're just supposed to sit in their little houses. Yeah, they live there. And that's it. Whenever people come in, patients come in, they hate it. Honestly, this is a true science fact, Luke. But yeah, no, you're right. Anxiety is one of the big comorbidities with depression. I mean, there's loads of other things as well, though, because depression can also come along with many other things. Cancer is a big one that's mentioned.
Whoa.
Diabetes, heart disease, chronic pain. All of these things are likely to make you feel a bit bummed, you know, to say the least.
Yeah.
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 And not also, good bummed.
It's also...
Because that might be enjoyable.
It's some respite anyway.
You're not supposed to bite it.
And yeah, it's interesting because there's so many things like when we talk about ADHD, ADHD is also like comorbid with depression. It's almost like there's this whole really complex system. And once you have one of these things, it could cause other things.
I mean,
they occur together at least.
Yeah, I think, you know, a long life of sort of pain and not nice things happening. Probably going to make you feel not good.
Mm-hmm.
And depression is more than just feeling not good, but feeling not good consistently for a long time and that affecting you in multiple ways.
Yeah.
Is kind of basically what depression is. So it does make sense that, you know, all of these things impact depression. What is interesting, though, is that depression can have impacts on your physical health, right? So it's not just I'm depressed because I've got cancer or heart disease. It could also be sort of the other way around of, oh, I'm depressed and that's making my heart disease worse.
Yeah.
Or my cancer worse. You know what I mean? Like depression, it is not a sort of just an effect of things. It's also a cause of other things in and of itself. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Or what I mean to say is that it can influence the body in its own right rather than just coming about spontaneously through outside means.
Yeah. And that's, I suppose, why it's so important to go and try and get it before it gets worse is because it can send you on sort of like a spiral.
Yeah, I wouldn't try and get depression at all.
Sorry. Catch it. No, oh God, you can't catch depression. Grab it and pin it down and punch it in the face and go, stop it as early as possible.
You're making a meal of this one. That's true. But as we're kind of saying, depression can be comorbid with many, many things. Also, medications. I forgot to mention that. Medications can make you depressed, including medications yes. that are supposed to make you less depressed. They can sometimes just make you more depressed for a bit. Yeah, we don't really understand depression all that well. We're going to have a really fun time when we get to the causes.
Everything! Woo! Yeah, I was once on a medication when I was about 19. I was paranoid that I was going to lose my hair. So I went on a medication and then I didn't lose my hair anyway, even when I came off it. So great. But one of the things was like, it's something like 1 in 10 men who take this, like they get depressed.
Mm.
And it's like, well, you can be depressed because you're like, oh no, I'm going to lose my hair. And then you take a drug that's like, oh, okay, you're not going to lose your hair now. And then you're still depressed. So I ended up coming off it specifically because I thought, oh, I think this is making me depressed.
Mm.
And then I went on antidepressants and they messed my prescription up and I went loopy.
Oh yeah, that was a fun time. Good time to know you. I met you like then.
Yeah, it was a real crash course in Luke you had there, wasn't it?
Yeah, I mean, really fast, fast-tracked our relationship. Anyway.
Ding-a-ling-ling, is that the ad bell?
I hope so. We don't have any other bells in this room.
Well, I'll tell you what we don't have in this room, Luke. We don't have people who have subscribed to SciGuys on YouTube and followed us on Apple Podcasts and Spotify.
I actually have done all those things.
I have too. But why don't we tell people about why specifically that is a very cool and interesting thing for them to do?
Well, we want to be everywhere with you all the time. And if you're on Apple Podcasts, we want to be there with you. If you're on Spotify, we want to be there with you. And if you're on YouTube, we want to be there with you. And you probably want us to be there with you too.
Even if you prefer to listen on Spotify and don't really watch us on YouTube all that much, much it really helps if you subscribe on every single platform, because it gets us in front of more people, which means it makes it easier to make this show, which you love, right? You love it. You love us, right?
Give me love. Validate my soul.
Subscribe to SciGuys on YouTube and follow us on Apple Podcasts and Spotify right now.
Heal the deep, deep chasm in my heart.
Let's get back to the show.
So, my dear Lucas, what are...
Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique, studio plus suite awaits, with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your studio plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
The symptoms of depression.
Okay, so I'm trying to remember the checklist that they always make you fill in when you go to therapy.
Good. Well, I've got a checklist in front of me that I'm actually going to check off whilst you get them.
Oh, Chekhov's gun. Basically,
how dare you? How dare you bring those words into my home?
Well, it's because you're going to bring it back later.
No, no, I shan't anymore.
Okay,
I am not to be held to the rules of filmmaking, Luke. I am my own man.
This is a theater thing, not anyway.
It's not just a theater thing. Yes, I know. Check. I f***ing study. Oh, look at me. You've made me go mad.
Corey, stress is not good for your overall body and health. Calm down. So there's obviously feeling sad, but you can be depressed without a specific obvious feeling of I feel sad,
mm-hmm.
right? One of the other things they ask you, which I mentioned up top, was like, have your friends mentioned you've been moving more slowly than normal? Which is such an interesting thing. And I suppose it, like, that one made me understand what, like, depression was in a wider sense, was like sort of depression of the overall central nervous system, right? It's like the whole thing is slowed down. It's like not functioning at the right rate, if that makes sense. I don't know if that's literally true, but that gave me a wider understanding of like, oh, okay, I'm feeling the feeling of sadness because my general system is like not working properly. Like my mood and motivation system's not working properly. And the sadness is one manifestation of that. So yes, the moving slowly, the like being anxious, the are you wanting to hurt yourself? Are you feeling like you are like a failure? You've let your family and friends down.
Well, you're going so quick.
Sorry, I filled out this form so many times when I had depression.
I feel like they should have just taken one look at you. Like, you were already making YouTube videos back then. That's enough, I think. That's enough.
That should be in the DSM-5.
You're making videos on the internet. Yeah, you got something wrong with you. I don't know what it is, but you got...
either depression or ADHD.
Depression, ADHD, autism, all of them. Not all of those things are wrong, you know. It's perfectly fine to be autistic. Having ADHD, on the other hand, that's not allowed. Not in this cat.
Not in this community where literally everyone has ADHD.
Look, honestly, you went through them real quick, so I'm just going to go through them all again.
Sure.
Persistent, sad, anxious, or empty mood. And I think it's important to sort of say that, not just sad, and also to say persistent, right? Because that is one of the key things with depression. It's not just, oh, I felt sad or I feel sad relatively often. It's persistent sadness. Do you know what I mean? It lingers in a way. Or empty as well, like a numbness. Is another sort of way that people describe depression, because sad is a weird emotion, right? Like, we say sad to mean lots of different things. Mm-hmm. Yes, they all fall under the umbrella of sad, but like empty isn't it's not sad.
It's like closer to like hopeless, or bleak, or like just feeling nothing, and that includes any positive feelings, like having any hope at all that things will be good.
And feeling nothing isn't inherently like it's not a negative feeling. Do you know what I mean? I mean, it insofar as you're not feeling anything, so you're not feeling a negative emotion. You're just not feeling anything.
Mm-hmm.
But then that lack of feeling can cause distress, like psychological distress, because it's not nice to not feel anything.
Yes.
Make sense?
Yes.
Yeah. So it's important, I think, to mention that it's not just feeling sad, but anxious or empty. Also, there, hopelessness and pessimism. You've just mentioned hopelessness. Well done, Luke. Irritability, frustration, and restlessness as well. That's another one. So, you know, I think that's... It mentioned on the World Health Organization website, I think it was, that that's potentially a bit more common in men. That, like, if you want to see depression in men, look maybe for, you know, anger. As well as all of the other things, right? Because, again, like... irritability and frustration, restlessness, like it's all coming, it can all come from a root of like, things are wrong and don't feel good and I have very little patience and all of that sort of stuff, right? Mm-hmm. So it can present in a way that you wouldn't necessarily expect it to present. Guilt, worthlessness, hopelessness, as we've said. Loss of interest or pleasure in hobbies and activities. Mm-hmm. Now that's, I think, like a really key one. And it's, you know, for me, before, in my life, sometimes things I really enjoy, I just, like, let's say a food that I enjoy cooking and eating, I'll eat it and I'm like, this brings me nothing.
Yeah.
I may as well be eating blank, you know?
Yeah.
It could be anything.
But I think that's a really good sign if you're looking out for whether you might have depression, is like, have things that you used to enjoy lost their, like, positivity?
Yeah.
Like, are they just like, are you just going through the motions of things that you used to enjoy? That I think is a good thing to spot.
I think it's something to be really aware of in yourself as well, because it's easy to kind of overlook it. You know what I mean? Like, it's not something that's necessarily immediately obvious, because it can happen so slowly. You know what I mean? Over a longer period of time, such that you don't recognize that, oh, all of the things that I enjoy I've stopped doing, or I do them, but I'm not enjoying them. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. So yeah, I mean, that's a good one to keep an eye out for. Decreased energy, sort of fatigue, or being slowed down, which you've mentioned already. But yeah, just a lack of energy to do things, difficulty concentrating, remembering or making decisions. You can also have, like, sort of, I think there are some cognitive impacts in terms of sort of speed of thought, or cognitive function rather, when it comes to depression, right? That can, apparently it can depress your cognitive function to a degree. Not saying that depression makes you stupid, but in many ways, depression does make you stupid. Do you know what I mean? In that, like, and I mean this in the kindest possible way, a lot of the things that you think when you're depressed, like, you can look back on them when you're not feeling depressed, and you're like, that's kind of dumb. Maybe that's just me. But thoughts I've got when I've been depressed, I look back on them, I'm like, man, I feel bad for you. You're letting those dumb thoughts get in your head. But, like,
yeah, I would put it differently to that. But yes.
I don't mean to, like, undermine the seriousness of it. I'm just saying that, like, you look back on it and you don't feel they don't feel the same as they felt when you were sort of in that pit.
Yeah, it's almost like the closest thing I could describe it to is, like, imagine how it feels to, like, look back at drama when you were a child and you're like, oh, that felt so real at the time, but now I have the context that allows me to see that actually it wasn't as important as I thought it was, or it wasn't as scary as I thought it was, even though, like, validate the feeling, it felt very real and like, but now I have context and it's not the same as it felt at the time.
If you intellectualize it, you can intellectually be like, this is irrational, right?
Yes.
Intellectually recognizing that something is irrational does not make it any easier to deal with emotionally, because emotions aren't rational. Do you know what I mean? In that sense.
Yeah.
Yep. So if we carry on, a few more symptoms of depression, changes in appetite. So that's increased or decreased appetite, weight changes as well. So oversleeping or undersleeping. So, like, you can have insomnia, right? But you can also have hypersomnia, where you sleep too much. You're just tired and you want to sleep all the time. Aches, pains, headaches, cramps, digestive problems with that clear physical cause that do not ease even with treatment. So yeah, the sort of psychosomatic symptoms that you're thinking there. And as well, there are other sort of changes that you might be able to see in someone, like sort of impulsivity, increase in drug and alcohol use. Sort of another one that it's not mentioned as often as I think it should be. Problems when it comes to, like, sex. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And not just, oh, you can't get it up, but also, I don't wanna, you know, like, yeah.
Or you wanna too much. As a coping mechanism.
To chase something that is... Because, I mean, if good feelings are going away, sex is probably one of the best feelings there is. Do you know what I mean? Like,
and you'll take what you can get.
Oh, no, yeah.
Like, I want to feel good.
Yeah, but. Exactly. And when I say sex is one of the best feelings you get, in a sort of very primal sense, it's easy to do, right? And it feels... There are a few other feelings that are so good for such little effort. You know what I mean? like it doesn't take that much work for sex to feel good.
Sure.
And if you're as good at it as we are, but not with each other.
I wasn't even suggesting that. I was just making a face.
Maybe.
Stop.
But,
we don't need Sci Guys sex fan fiction. Welcome
to After
Dark.
Just read what I've written, Luke.
Just because the show has ended doesn't mean Luke's going home.
So like wanting a lot of sex, yeah, but also not being able to perform or not even like really enjoying the feelings. Like that's a bad. If it gets to that point, oh boy, that's a rough one, I think. Depression's bad entirely, with or without that. But you know, just. I'm just saying. Anyways, problems with sexual desire or performance, all of these sorts of things, being more sort of risky with your behavior, feeling on edge. And if we look at it by age, it also is different as well, right? So if you're looking at kids, they could just be anxious, cranky. If they're refusing to go to school or pretending to be sick or being really clingy, you know, when a kid is really clingy, they could be depressed. As they get older, being easily frustrated or sulking or low self-esteem, all of those sorts of things are things to sort of watch out for. And they're also more likely, apparently, in that sort of like young, older kid age group, you're more likely to have an increased appetite when depressed, apparently.
When they're kids.
Older kids, yeah.
Older kids.
Okay. Yeah. And then young adults, weight gain, hypersomnia, negative view of life in the future. Really, it's just being millennial and Gen Z, right? Like, negative view, like they should strike that one. That's just a baseline at this point. You know what I mean?
Yeah, but I think it's an interesting time actually to bring up the idea that like it's not necessarily depression if you have things that you should legitimately be sad about.
Yeah.
And like that's a big thing about Gen Z that is leveled at Gen Z, that they have like climate anxiety. And it's like, is it climate anxiety or are they just legitimately worried about a thing that's legitimately going to affect them and that the people in power are not doing anything about?
Yeah.
That is probably a normal thing for your anxiety to be activated by.
I would say that's the case for anxiety. But when it comes to depression, right, like something, if you have something to be depressed about and that's what's causing you to be depressed, that doesn't mean that you don't have that you're not depressed. You know what I mean?
Right. Okay. Like, so you can still seek depressive treatment for that.
Okay. For example, right? Like, you are terminally ill, right? That is going to make you depressed. That's not something you can do anything about.
Right.
You would still get treatment for depression.
Okay.
Right? Do you know what I mean? Like, it's so having a, it doesn't need to have sort of no sort of material cause. Let's say, right? To be classified as depression, it doesn't need to be, and I use this term very loosely, sort of irrational. To be classified as depression,
yeah.
Whereas anxiety is kind of inherently an overreaction to things. Even if something, you know, should be making you anxious, it's kind of like an over sort of reaction to it. In the simplest way. Mm-hmm. I do not want people coming away from this thinking that I'm saying that being anxious is overreacting. I'm not. Mm-hmm. But yeah, as you get older, it kind of gets into the depression symptoms that you're more kind of probably familiar with. So decreased libido, more depressive episodes when you get sort of middle age, insomnia or waking up too early, and then also GI symptoms as well for people who are middle aged. And then older adults, more likely to have lack of emotions rather than feeling depressed, sort of depressed mood, like a sort of sadness, you know what I mean? So more likely to feel that sort of numbness or emptiness. Memory and thinking problems apparently can be more sort of common in that age group. Quite literally, in my notes, pseudo-dementia is a term that is being used to describe that there, in severe cases of depression with that sort of older age group. And gender as well. There's different presentations based on gender. So, you know, it, as we said, men and women, probably more likely in men, more likely to sort of show different symptoms, like seeming sort of angry, you know, touchy, that sort of thing. And then also increased use of alcohol and drugs. Men are more likely to use alcohol when depressed. And mental health symptoms, in some cases, appear as physical problems, racing heart, tightened chest, headaches, digestive issues. And like I said earlier, men will go to the doctor for that and be told, you're depressed. And they're like, what?
I bet they hate that answer as well.
Yeah, it's all in your head, mate.
They're
it's
real just, furious.
Well, what can you do? I just, you know... exercise, go outside, have friends and things. That's probably, I'll do you some good. And I wish I was joking, right? But that stuff, it actually helps. Like, I think the worst part, not the worst part, but one of the worst parts of being depressed is people saying, just exercise. Like, I exercise every day and it makes me feel good. And then you actually manage to exercise for some period and it does improve, you know, your mental well-being.
Yeah.
Just not saying it cures your depression, but it does make you feel better. You're like, because part of the, like, one of the things about being depressed is that it's difficult to do things. And so, like, you can't just say exercise, because inherently exercising is more difficult, you know, especially if, you know, if you're fatigued, if you're sleeping too much, if you don't have energy or joy for anything, mm-hmm. right? It's going to be hard to exercise, because inherently exercising is not something that feels immediately very good.
Yeah.
It's a lot of hard work, and then, you know, kind of like sex.
I think part of the, that's kind of part of the point of antidepressants, or like one of the strategies you can use with antidepressants is you don't use the antidepressant necessarily for long term, although you might do. You might use it to sort of take the edge off some of those symptoms, raise you out of your depression so that you can make lifestyle changes. And that might be things like exercising, or it might be identifying areas of your life that you have that are making you depressed, like things that you do or people you know or whatever's going on in your life that's just causing you, there's a signal in your brain going, I'm not happy about this. Mm. So you can rise out of that, make some lifestyle changes, and then you might be able to wean off those antidepressant medications. Yeah. And then, but you've now got into better habits.
Yeah.
of keeping yourself in a good place. So just because exercising can help your depression doesn't mean that your depression is in some way invalid or you're silly for being depressed and you should have been exercising all the time.
You can think of it as kind of using a support or a cast or something, you know, mm-hmm. whilst a bone is mending, right? Like the cast isn't doing anything to the bone. Do you know what I mean? It's not, the cast isn't what is permanently making the bone, you know, one piece as opposed to being in two pieces, right? Mm-hmm. But it is providing the means for the bone to set in the proper way, right?
Taking the pressure off the bone so the bone can heal.
Exactly. Yeah. And that's kind of like, you know, that's not a one-to-one with antidepressants, obviously. Like, some people are on antidepressants, you know, basically permanently. But, yeah, antidepressants can often be used as just kind of like a, all right, leg up. Yeah, absolutely. And so we've kind of gone through the signs and the symptoms. You get it, right? Like, depression, you're depressed. It's really, like, I think we all know what depression kind of is. I think it's important to say that it is different from just feeling sad. Obviously, you need to have these symptoms for, like, you know, at least 2 weeks for it to be even sort of diagnosed as depression. So, because the main thing is that these sort of depressive episodes, they're different from sort of normal feelings, right? Your mood is going to fluctuate, right? You're going to feel sad sometimes, Luke. I'm sorry to say it, but sadness, it's a part of being a human person.
Mm.
And you're most of the way there to that. But, you know, at some point you'll probably learn that, yeah, sadness is going to happen. But also, just feeling sad for a day, a few days, whatever, is not depression, right? Like, it needs to be that sort of more serious level, or for a really long period of time, and then start to actually impact, you know. If you're feeling sad, but you're able to do everything in your life with absolutely no problem, and that's not like, oh, I'm able to get it all done, and I feel even worse now. I mean, as in, you're feeling sad, you get on with it, you get stuff done, and you feel you just feel exactly the same as you normally would, right? Probably not depression, right? Depression is one of those things where it impacts you in many different ways, or it can impact you in many different ways. And yeah, so I mean, we could go through the sort of diagnosis of it, but I mean, do you want to tell me about how they diagnose depression, Luke?
Well,
In my experience,
it was literally going to the doctor and going, I feel sad. And they went, okay, here's some Prozac. And the Prozac wasn't good for me.
Prozac sounds like a tasty treat.
To be fair, I never gave Prozac a proper chance because they kept on messing up my prescription. So I was on like a high level of Prozac, and then they were like, oh, we haven't fixed your prescription. So I then was off it for 2 days, and then I was back on it full high dose again, and I went literally loopy.
Yeah, that was not good.
Antidepressants are very messy if you come off them quickly or go on a high dose quickly, which I was frequently doing because they were messing up my prescription. So that was bad. But yes, generally you'll have a sit down. They'll run you through the sort of questionnaire. You might be referred to a mental health, like a local mental health team.
If you're lucky,
you hopefully will be referred for a small amount of talking therapy as well. Mm. They often do like 8 or 12 weeks, which is not necessarily like, it's more counseling often. Mm. It's not like with a therapist. It might be with a counselor, which is a slightly different thing. That's my experiences of it, basically. I reckon that's probably roughly indicative of the UK experience. I've had times where I've gone to the doctor for depression and the doctor's just given me medication and that's it. And then I have times where I've been referred to like a local mental health team and gone through therapy.
I think the difficulty is that there are sort of different mental health clinics and sort of resources in different places.
Mm-hmm.
So you can't have the same sort of, you go to the doctor and then they just send you to the mental health folk. Because a lot of places don't have it where they have that with the availability to help everyone who is depressed, which is like a lot of people. Like it was probably quite a lot of people, right? And even like subclinical depression as well. You know what I mean? Because that's another thing when it comes to treatment. You don't need to be like, you know, at a sort of diagnostically significant or a clinically significant level of depression
mm-hmm.
for the treatment, you know, let's say talking therapy, CBT and stuff. For those to be beneficial to you. So if you're like feeling a bit sad and depressed and, you know, the doctor says, well, actually, you're just normal sad and depressed, not clinically sad and depressed. Just look into like therapy and stuff anyway. It'll probably be helpful, mm-hmm. you know, because mm-hmm. you don't need to be like, you don't need to cross this line and suddenly you can do something about it. You know what
yes,
I mean?
Yes, but speaking of crossing lines as well, one of the things they might get you to do is, as I've alluded to already, fill in a questionnaire. You get a score out of 30. Mm. At least in my experience, a score out of 30, and it asks you basically to rank very often, somewhat often, sort like sometimes, like rarely or never. I think it's like a 1 to 5 scale mm-hmm. of like a bunch of questions, and you get a score out of 30 of how depressed and anxious you are, and then that will be used to not only sort of measure how well the therapy is working for you, but it also might be used to work out whether you are clinical depression or subclinical depression, as Corey's just said.
Yeah. The thing is, I feel like the diagnosis, the sort of diagnostic process in the UK it's not the best for depression. And I don't want to be the kind of person that's like, oh, they're just throwing antidepressants at everyone. I mean, like, yeah, I do know people that have gotten antidepressants quite quick, and what would probably be better is therapy. But we don't have the resources for that. So when you look at the diagnosis, right, I was on the NICE website, right? So that's basically sort of, they set the sort of standard of care in the UK when it comes to sort of medical stuff, right? And essentially, they've got a little guideline for trying to figure out if someone's got depression, just for doctors to look at and be like, okay, cool. This is what I should be looking out for. These are the sort of questions I should be asking. But basically, there are two sort of depression identification questions, and then they probably give you a sort of questionnaire and stuff after that. But during the last month, have you often been bothered by feeling down, depressed, or hopeless? During the last month, have you often been bothered by having little interest or pleasure in doing things, right? And then depending on the answers, basically if they answer yes to one of those questions, or at least one of those questions, and they've had those symptoms for, you know, most days for at least 2 weeks, then you carry on to ask about more of the symptoms of depression. You can give them a questionnaire and all of that sort of stuff. Yeah. But I mean, depression, probably not that difficult to diagnose, right? Like, I mean, the difficulty lies more in the fact that we don't really know what depression is. Like, people are probably saying, like, people will be saying, oh, it's a chemical imbalance. I was guilty of saying that when I was a child because, you know, that sounded scientific and that's what was kind of being bandied about. Absolutely not. We don't know if it's a chemical imbalance. We actually don't really know what it is at all.
Yeah.
There's no signs for it.
My favorite thing about this, which I have mentioned on the show before, which I just found fascinating, is that when we talk about being a chemical imbalance, part of why that is because what an antidepressant or like what a standard antidepressant like Prozac does is it increases the release and decreases the absorption of serotonin. Mm-hmm. So you've overall increased the amount of serotonin in the brain, which suggests that if increasing the amount of serotonin in the brain in depressed people makes them less depressed, you'd think that decreasing the amount of serotonin in not depressed people would make them depressed, right? But it doesn't work.
Yep.
If you take away the serotonin from non-depressed people's brains, they don't get depressed, which doesn't make any sense. Directly the serotonin that is causing the depression, the lack of or boosting of the serotonin that's causing the depression. It's weird. We don't have any idea. We don't even really know why antidepressants make you less depressed. We know what they do.
Yeah.
But we don't know why you might become less depressed because of them.
We've done a whole episode on antidepressants as well, so you can go and watch that. But like, I think one of the interesting things about it is that we don't really know how much of this works. Like, one of the things with antidepressants is quite literally, if you know someone in your family has had good results from using this antidepressant, that would be preferred for you to use that.
Right.
Yeah. Like literally, or if you've had good results from this one in the past, that's a preferred one. Someone in your like immediate family has had good results. Use that one. And like, it kind of bring it to what causes depression. Like ultimately, lots of things like social, psychological, biological factors. So like genetic stuff, sort of nurture stuff, like your environment, as in, is someone being mean to you every day? That's probably going to impact it, you know, a little bit, the very least. And, you know, alcohol, drug use, those can all sort of cause or influence or, you know, exacerbate depression. Thank you, Luke, for mouthing exacerbate to me.
You're so welcome. I thought I'd let you get away with that, but no, okay.
No, right. I don't
credit where credit's due.
Mate, I'm not that prideful, okay? I'm fully willing to put my hands up and say, I wasn't going to say exacerbate, but that is a word that I, you know, probably would have wanted to use in that situation. And I thank you for it. Turns out you can do something right.
Wow, rude. Is someone being mean to you every day?
I am just trying to give the people a window into what it's like to be depressed. And unfortunately, Luke, you're feeling pretty good of late. So I'm trying to, like, you know, speed run you back into...
Knock me down a bit. You tried draining my serotonin and it didn't work. So now you're just going
to
be mean.
Well, I mean, to be fair, what I did was just stick a pipe in your ear. And like, that's... apparently, that's not how it works. I didn't study neurobiology, so I wouldn't know. But yeah, no, cause of depression. A bad thing happened in your life, like a bereavement, an unemployment, or a big sad happen, any kind of big sad in your life.
Person die.
Yeah, that's what bereavement is.
Oh, yeah.
Do you want to say...
Divorce.
Okay, that's... Wow, yeah, true.
Yeah.
Any kind of trauma can cause depression. If you go through that, you're more likely to become depressed. You know, it's hard to say, man. It's really hard to say. It's linked to sort of physical health as well. They can kind of influence each other. So physical inactivity, for example, so not exercising, we've spoken about that already. Sort of a lack of physical activity can kind of influence you. It can exacerbate depression. Exacerbate. There you go. All of those sorts of things, right? But it's really difficult to pin down what depression is because it's so multifaceted, because it's so complex. And ultimately, all the people that we sort of classify as having depression might, like, it's on the surface, they seem very similar.
Yeah.
They could be different things. Just could be different things. You know what I mean? Like, if you want to think of it as well as, like, sometimes people are depressed because of a reaction to some event in their life, right? Mm-hmm. Like something big and traumatic has happened. And it's not, it makes sense for that to then impact you, right? You don't want it to. Ideally it wouldn't, and you should be able to sort of like move on. But like, there's a difference between that and then people who are depressed, like, basically just because.
Yeah, I was going to say this when you were saying about for doctors, like, diagnosing depression is relatively easy. And I was going to say it's partly because it's such a broad thing. It's like saying diagnosing chronic pain is quite easy. You ask people, have you been experiencing pain? Do you have any reason why you should be experiencing that pain? No? Well, then you have chronic pain. That might not be the diagnostic criteria for chronic pain. It's an example. But like, it's such a broad thing. Mm. Have you been feeling like you don't enjoy stuff and you don't really think the future's going to be very good and you feel sad about it? Yeah. But there might be like 50 different disorders underneath that. Some of them caused by genetics, some of them caused by bereavement, some of them caused by the way you were raised, like situational, anything. But the broad strokes, depression is quite easy to diagnose because it is so broad.
Yeah, it's interesting. It seems the way that I'm kind of looking at it, it seems like it is just a mode of human. You know what I mean? Like, as in, it's one of the modes that you can switch humans between. There's like normal mode. There's depressed mode. There's other sorts of... There's horny mode. You don't want to switch that one. That's like... when people are horned up, they're fucking insane. Like, maybe do an episode on that, but like...
The science of horny.
But I'm not joking though, right? Like, when people are horned up, like, they're not the same person.
Sure. Yeah,
it's weird. But yeah, depression, like... because it can happen to basically anyone. And like, yeah, you can say, oh, it could be 50 different things that are 50 different disorders. But then also there's another way of looking at it, such that like it's maybe 50 different causes, but they all lead to the same destination, which is you just overwhelmingly feeling crap. You know what I mean?
And stuff's not working. Yeah. None of you working.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Like, your body's just like, nah, man.
What's the point?
Nah. You know what? This part of brain that I don't usually listen to, the stupid talky one that has consciousness, blah, 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 God, that's feeling sad. And so I've decided that I'm going on strike as the rest of your body, and I'm not going to do anything. Mm-hmm. That's kind of what depression is, right? You know what I mean? Where it's like, your brain, consciousness, you're like, I'm sad. And your body's like, I'm on strike. I'm not going to do everything as well as I should.
Because what's the point?
What is the point, Luke?
Yeah, exactly.
Oh, God, no, that's really
that's
sad.
What, that's, yeah, well, that's what it feels like.
Yeah, you know? Like, yeah.
There's no point.
Yeah, exactly. And so, I mean, let's talk about treatment. So a great, really cheery statistic to start us off. More than 75% of people in low and middle income countries receive no treatment.
Great.
Yeah. We know how to treat depression.
Yeah.
We're not bad at treating depression. You know, therapy is good. Medications is good. Those two things is two of the best things we've got. Brain zappies, also good.
I had some of
those.
Talk
about brain zappies in a bit. But yeah, but 75% of people in low and middle income countries, no treatment, even though it's there. We know what to do.
And it's cheap as hell. Prozac's cheap as hell.
Yeah. Yeah, like you can pop them like, well, not pills, like sweets, you know, like little, like Tic Tacs. But yeah, no, so antidepressants, SSRIs are the most common ones. We've done a whole episode on that, so I won't waste more of your time here, but you've kind of already explained it. They change stuff going on in your brain, and somehow that stops you from feeling depressed sometimes, depending on which one you take, who you are, and a lot of other factors. there's other medications. You mentioned the esketamine. So that's intranasal, so basically, yeah, you shoot it up your nose, esketamine, it's called. I think it's FDA approved, it's apparently really quick, it's fast acting. But then, I don't know, giving someone some ket, it's probably gonna make them feel good for a bit, you know what I mean? who knows? And that's not me saying that drug doesn't work, but like, hearing that, like, shooting some ket-related chemical up someone's nose, they're like, oh man, that makes them feel good. I'm like, okay, yeah, that makes, well, a lot of people do ket, so it makes sense as to why.
It's like finding somebody who's like tired all the time and then being like, right, we're gonna give you a cocaine nasal spray, and then we're surprised when that works.
But, oh, it works.
Yeah, wow.
And they really want, like, they want more and more, and it keeps on working. They're more productive, if anything. so that's another option there. Let's skip past that and go on to therapies. So talk therapy, counseling can both help. There's things like CBT, cognitive behavioral therapy, which, yeah, for me, it felt too workbooky.
It's like practicing, like breaking you out of bad thought loops, mm-hmm. kind of thing.
Which can be really helpful for some people, but for other people, you know, like us losers.
Didn't work for us.
Ah, no, it didn't. You know what worked for me? Watching Dan and Phil Games. This episode of Sci Guys is brought to you by Dan and Phil Games. Maybe. Please, guys.
No, it's not.
Luke told me to make this joke at the
start.
No, I
this is funny for you. This is not funny for me.
That's why he told me to make it. No, laughter is also the best medicine. Doesn't say that anywhere, but I just assume.
I was going to say, does it say that in your notes?
Sometimes I do a make 'em up, you know? just drop a few fake facts in there.
Bit of fake. Like when they put like a fake thing on a map to check if somebody's copying your map.
A paper town.
You're just checking if somebody's copying your notes.
This episode of Sci Guys is brought to you by John Green.
Oh, no.
Well, you said you brought up paper town. I'm not the what? The next thing you're going to mention is the faults in stars? That's not on me. That's on you. So psychotherapy or, you know, normal, well-adjusted person therapy can also work.
I wouldn't. You're a bit close to the line.
No, so psychotherapies can help a lot, but there's also brain stimulation therapy. Luke, chuck it over to you. Tell us about the brain zappies.
Is that what I had? So I had a thing called transcranial magnetic stimulation.
Mm-hmm.
It's quite expensive. It does work 80% of the time, according to the stats that they gave me when I paid for it.
80% of the time, it works every time.
But basically what that was, as far as I understood it, was they put an electromagnet next to my head. There was no like electricity entering my brain. It was all external. It was a magnet. It wasn't like brain zappies.
They were inducing things in your brain rather than like directly sending electrical zaps to your brain.
Yes. Yeah. So they put an electromagnet next to my head. One part is next to the bit that regulates mood, and the other part is next to the bit that does anxiety. And the basics that they explained to me was that they're trying to grow by zapping. It goes click, 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 click. And it creates, use an electromagnet to stimulate your brain. And it's growing the area that regulates mood and shrinking the area that regulates anxiety. I had it for 30 days, every day for 30 days. And I felt much better for, well, it's been many years now. So it worked for me. But as I said, it is expensive. The NHS doesn't provide it in many areas. They do in some areas. And it might not work. So it is a risky one.
Well, I wouldn't say risky, right?
Like, it's not financially risky.
Yeah, financially risky. Although it's not, it's kind of the last resort at this point. I mean, it's not something that you're going to walk in and say, I'm depressed, and they're going to just give it to you.
It's for treatment resistant for depression.
Yeah, absolutely. And there are ones where they can put electrodes, like, actually into your brain. You got one where that's not the case, but there are different, it's not TMS, but there are different sorts of treatments that do involve sort of zapping your brain kind of more directly. And yeah, I mean, it's weird. It feels, it's one of those things that just feels medieval almost.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? And like, yes, I understand that having the electricity and zapping into a brain, it is very modern. We need our technology to do that. But also, like, It's like taking a broken bone and being like, okay, this thing is broken. I know what I'll do. I'll snap it back into place and just wait for it to be fine again. Oh, I'll put this hard, straight thing on it to make sure that it stays where it's supposed to stay, right? That feels very rough and tumble.
Yeah.
Like how are we alive as a species sort of thing? Like, we should have come up with something better than this already, right? And when it comes to depression, either we just give you stuff that like we know like is somehow linked to happy and brain, and just hope that it works. And sometimes it does. We don't know how or like why. We know how. We don't know why. or as a last resort, we'll just stick stuff in your brain or stick stuff around your brain and just go zap, zap, zap with electricity and hope that that works.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like it just feels nonsense. It just feels like a nonsense idea that works.
But it works. It's quite successful.
Yeah. And so that would be the sort of treatment. There's also self-care. And I want to bring this up because self-care, I think, is something that's misunderstood. You know, self-care, I would say, is not just doing things that make you feel good.
Mm.
It's doing things that are good for you.
Right.
I think a lot of people need to understand that. You know, self-care isn't, you know, ordering Chipotle 5 nights a week because you like Chipotle. Ordering Chipotle could be self-care, you know, balanced diet and blah, 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 all of that sort of stuff, right? But like, yeah, it's looking after yourself, right?
Mm-hmm.
It's literally self-care. So you wouldn't, if you were charged with looking after another person, be like, I know what I'll do. I'll just give in to every single whim and desire that they've got forever. Because it'll make them feel good.
Yeah.
And that's caring for them. No, you put the kid to bed at their bedtime, even if they don't really want to go to bed at their bedtime, because you know that they're going to be tired tomorrow if they don't go to bed at their bedtime. You say you can't have dessert for breakfast because it's not going to fill you up. It's not a healthy start to your day. Do you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
There's all of these sorts of things, right? And like every now and then you can have a treat. Absolutely. That's part of self-care, doing things that make you feel good. But the most important part of self-care that I think most people neglect is like doing the difficult stuff, like brushing your teeth. Is self-care, you know?
The
having
stuff
a shower
where,
is self-care.
It's the stuff where you don't... I mean, shower is more obvious, but stuff like brushing your teeth, exercising, eating healthily is the stuff where it actually takes a while for you to see the benefits of it.
Yeah.
And then if you stop doing it, it would take a while for you to see the bad things from not doing it. And so you really have to commit to it.
Yeah.
And it is, you know, therapy is sometimes described as a form of like re-education. It's like adult education. Like just for things that you might have missed in childhood and like stuff like looking after yourself, really looking after yourself, really committing to looking after yourself because nobody else is going to do it for you anymore is like, Corey's just done a big shocked face. No one else is going to look after you, Corey. You have to look after yourself. That's what self-care is. And when the effects of it are not immediately obvious and the effects of not doing it are not immediately obvious, it is sometimes hard to keep that stuff in mind and to keep upkeeping it, whether you've already got the benefits of it or whether you like you're depressed and you need to start doing that stuff and you're not going to see the effects for ages and your mental like your span of how you feel because you're depressed, your span of how you feel about yourself might not be more than a few days, a few weeks at tops. But the effects of like doing a bunch of exercise and looking after yourself might take months to manifest in your life.
Yeah, and to be honest, if you're depressed as well, you might not even be able to see past the current day. Do you know what I mean?
Like, yeah.
As in, whatever in the now feels. And I think exercise is one of those things where it can feel really good when you're doing it, mm-hmm. right? But it's not one of those things that feels immediately really good when you're doing it, I don't
no,
think.
No, no.
You know what I mean? Like, if you're going on a run and you want to get that runner's high, which I know you've never experienced.
Ugh, I want it so bad.
I had it a couple times, man. So Luke and I used to live together. We would go on runs, a group of us. And, like, I thought it was ridiculous. It was horrible. We did it. And then one day.
Oh,
it felt. Well, I can understand why people run. Like, from that point, I was like, oh, you guys are just getting high.
Yeah.
That makes sense to me now.
I want that so bad.
Yeah. But you got to put in the work and put in the time. And it's one of those things where it's really difficult to do that when you don't get immediate sort of positive feedback
mm-hmm.
because you're already feeling so bad. Do you know what
yeah.
I mean?
Like, yeah, I remember reading a really interesting study about, I don't think it was specifically about depression, but it was about, I think, drug addiction, where it was talking about how long in the future people consider themselves.
Mm.
And like the average was like, I think a few weeks. And then if you were addicted to drugs, it was like maybe like 12 hours or maybe like a few hours. So you literally in that state where you don't consider you in 12 hours to be you, would do something that screws you in 12 hours over to benefit you now. And that's a really hard place to be mentally, where you're doing, like, ultimately you will experience the downside of your actions 12 hours from now. But if you don't consider that person to be you, you're just constantly screwing yourself over in the future.
No, yeah, absolutely. I mean, for me, if I'm being honest, a week, I think.
Really?
I think I could maybe 2 weeks, but like, that's pushing it. Like, if the decisions that I make, yeah, I will make decisions that benefit me in a longer term than, you know, a week. But the tough stuff, do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
That the stuff that's like, oh man, this is a real slog. I should get this done so it's easier for me. I really don't think I can do more than a week or two.
Wow.
ADHD. You know what I mean? I think that's literally it. It's just like, oh, that's too far in the future for me to consider it being done. Look, you've actually told me before that, like, I once tried to plan something with you a month in advance. This was many years ago.
Yeah.
And you've said something along the lines of like, yeah, I don't plan my life farther, like more than a week at a time.
Oh, I definitely do now.
Yeah, you have to now. You have to now. But like, there was a point in your life where what you were doing in like greater than 1 week was none of your business.
That's so funny.
So that would be self-care. I mean, just to run through these, stay connected to friends and family. That's a really important one, right? Like, I find this. Sometimes I'm like, oh God, I can't be bothered with all my lovely, wonderful friends, seeing them and having good times. I don't want to. And then I go and see them and I'm like, I love my friends. This is what a wonderful, joyous time. Woo! Every single time I forget.
And now you've got a wall of friends in your living room to remind you who your friends are.
That's a different thing. The reason I've got, so whenever someone comes to our home, we take a picture of them and we put them up on the wall with a little signature. It's not to show them off, although I love showing off some of my friends.
Mm-hmm.
But it's more because I genuinely just forget who it is that I know. I invited an entire group of people who live together to a party of mine, except for one of them. Unintentionally. And I thought I had invited them. Like, until the day when when everyone else showed up. Without that person. And we're like,
God.
You didn't invite them. And I was like, oh, just assume that I'm going to.
You're like the friendship equivalent of that Billy on the Street video where he goes, for a dollar, name a woman. And everyone's like, oh, why is this so hard? We're like, hey, Corey, for a dollar, name one of your friends. And you're like, who do I know?
I genuinely struggle. Like there were points in my life where I would be depressed. Oh, I don't have any friends. And then someone would be like, what about these people? And I'm like, shut up.
Yeah.
Yes, they had slipped my mind. Of course they had. But, whoa. Yeah, no.
Corey doesn't have object permanence for people.
mostly the same anyway, right? And we're all equals.
I can't prove they continue existing when I'm not looking at them.
Okay, let's not go there. So try to keep on doing things that you used to enjoy, even if you don't enjoy them, like, sort of all that much right now. Like, you know, that's part of self-care.
Mm.
And that's not forcing yourself to do things that you hate, but, you know, if you enjoy, say, playing D&D with your friends and you've not been enjoying it that much, you know, be open, let them know and be like, hey, look, I'm not feeling the joy of this, like, blah, blah, blah. And try and keep on doing it in a way that makes it fun for all of you. Stay connected to people, exercise regularly, even just walking, like getting outside in fresh air. getting outside in fresh air is so beneficial. You can be cooped up for a few days and just not realize how negatively that impacts you.
Yeah.
Talking about your feelings, healthcare, not drinking too much alcohol or doing too many drugs, all of these sorts of things, trying to sleep regularly and well, all of that sort of stuff, right? And then finally, prevention is useful and works. Prevention programs have been shown to reduce depression. I think that's from the World Health Organization. But yeah, it turns out that if you just intervene early and try and stop people from being depressed, like get older people exercising or having, kids who have got behavioral issues, getting them help early, all of these sorts of things, community support, all of these things can help people be less depressed. It's almost as though we're a social species and having a world wherein we are encouraged to socialize with each other and be active makes us feel good.
Wow. I didn't have you down as a commie, but here we are.
Really?
Actually, I did have you down as a commie.
Hey! That's never been confirmed nor denied. I walk the line.
I walk the line.
Oh, well, that's about it, Luke. I think there's just one thing left to do. It's the Quit for a Quiz.
Dun, 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 dun. Depression edition.
I'm so happy about that.
Depression edition.
So, Luke, the rules for the Quit for a Quiz are the same as always. I'll ask one question. That's one question between you and the audience. The first person to answer the question after finish asking it wins. What do they win?
An antidepressant of their choice if they want/need it and have it prescribed by a medical professional.
Okay.
And pay the prescription fee if it's applicable in your country.
The question is, name one of my friends.
For some reason, Jedward sprung to mind. Which, they are on your friend wall. So yeah, Jedward. That's two of your friends. In fact, I failed because I named one of your friends. I didn't. Oh,
I'm
God.
Oh, I said name one.
Ah.
You named two people.
Okay, just Jer then. Or Dwood.
That is it from us, I think. But before we go, we'd like to thank all of our patrons with an extra special thank you to executive producers Glitch Rabbit and Rev Lunar. And thank you for listening. You can find the full references for this episode down in the description. Subscribe to new episodes every Monday, and why not leave us a nice wee review? You support the pod at patreon.com/SciGuys, or you can find and contact us at SciGuysPod on Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, YouTube, and at SciGuys on TikTok too. Or you can send us an email at SciGuysPod@gmail.com.
That's SciGuysPod@gmail.com. Oh, yeah, me. SciGuysPod@gmail.com.
You can follow me at NotCory everywhere.
You can follow me at Luke Cutforth everywhere.
Goodbye.
Goodbye.
Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique, studio plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your studio plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
Sally from finance loves fly fishing. She used to spend her weekend surrounded by receipts. Then she switched her company to Ramp. Now, spend is all under control, all in one place. Her team submits their expenses with a text, and she can close the books without all the busy work. So Sally's weekends are all her own, surrounded by fish, not receipts. Switch your business to ramp.com and love finance again.